Well, nice to meet you. And leadership is such a thing. There's a book of Maxwell, who's like one of the management gurus, who writes about 360 degree leadership, which is something I like. Basically, his point is everyone is a leader in his own field. Everyone should be a leader in his own field. So not just, you know, the CEO and everybody else is sort of sitting on the bench. No, everyone can lead. Not only managers lead, but anyone really can lead others in their field. And I think that's like the nicest outlook you can have on leadership. I mean, at least when you can see yourself with your own potential as a leader. Whoever chose the topic was highlighting compassion and leadership. Compassion is a principle that should touch every aspect of life, otherwise we live in a world of hell, obviously. If there's no compassion, then everyone is just preoccupied with self-interest. So then it's a heavy world, then it's dog-eat-dog world. So that's not very, very good. So, but again, I think in the context of this 360 degree leadership, compassion makes sense. Basically, it's everyone's challenge to develop more compassion. My thoughts on compassion are that it's not possible to really be compassionate unless you have something better. So you can externally act as if you are compassionate. But if you are not having a better quality of life, how can you be compassionate? Now, qualities of life can be measured in so many ways. You can say, like, somebody has materially a better quality of life than others, and say therefore they can help others. Yeah, but to what extent can you help in that way? Okay, giving things to the poor is a way of helping, helping less privileged people to get a little bit better facility is a way of helping, but it's not very profound, I think. I think true compassion must really mean happiness. You have to give people happiness if you want to be successful and really compassionate. Well, that's not so easy, because you first have to be happy yourself. Otherwise, how can you give happiness? Otherwise, it's false. You can smile very benevolently. So compassion is a very big concept. Real compassion is very huge, actually, and it's not so easy to realize that. But okay, to an extent, we can try and strive for that. You know, just like the old biblical principle of loving your neighbor, love thy neighbor. Okay, that's a very good principle. The only problem is I don't. You know, can't stand him actually. Think he's a real drag, you know, my neighbor. I don't know about yours, if you love your neighbor. And the thing is this, I can't force my heart. Right? My heart is what it is. It loves what it loves. And I can't tell it what to love. it just does it on its own. And it has nothing to do with, it can't dictate it. So unless there is something in my neighbor that awakens love in me, it's hard. Yeah? It can't just love on command. Love. Not happening. Yeah? Nothing coming. Love comes only when someone really does something that touches us. If somebody does something, you think, wow, that's really nice. Okay, then you get a soft spot, you know, for a person. Otherwise, you can have some sort of universal love, right, which is not connected to anything or anyone. It's just like, but I don't see that as real love. And I see that more as a somewhat artificial. Of course, there may be a level of love which goes beyond the performance of people. A level of love where you say, well, I just want to, you know, be kind to everyone, even if they're not kind to me. Still, you can have some sort of general sense of love, but let's say you have a classroom with kids, and you're the one who's sort of, and they're not from a very privileged background, and it's your job to bring these kids up. And you do it out of idealism. You stand in front of the class and you really want to help the class. But still, there are some kids in the class that you like more than others. It's natural because they are, they did something that sort of stood out, you know, some quality. So therefore, for love to go deeper, there has to be a personal element coming in. And compassion also, we need that. So, yes, I think leadership when I saw that my audience were all ladies, right, then I was thinking about women in leading roles versus men, and that in they have done studies of countries which are predominated by male energy and countries that are predominated by female energy. For example, like they say in Switzerland is a male predominated country, very much so. Sweden, a very female predominated country. The men are kind of like very sort of soft spoken and a little shy, and the women are very self assured and they know exactly what they want, and society is very cushioned, you know, like, I mean, very. The social values are like very much in the foreground, whereas like more male societies, competitive, driven by desire to achieve success and so on. It's definitely been said that that the world for long has been predominated by a male mentality, a very, very competitive type of mentality, and that it could use much more care. And these days, the word care is kind of a buzzword. Everywhere, and just more care. So leadership in care is a type of leadership. Africa is also counted under the male-dominated kind of cultures. But also there, the element of care is coming in. And as education will increase in Africa, naturally, ladies will come to the foreground. In this country, it's interesting that ladies are the are certainly the majority in the educational system. So looking at that, the women are going to call the shots. It looks like that's the future, if you look at it. Of course, in a balanced environment, I guess both male and female qualities have their part to play, and should be balanced. And after all, our first premise is 360 degree leadership. Everyone should be a leader. One problem, though, that occurs is that oftentimes you see that in the world of today, many people as individuals are not very complete. Many people as individuals have a lot of problems, and that's across the board. Doesn't matter where you are, which country or which community, but there are a lot of people in the world who are lacking in personal quality, and basically they have a problem. Either they may have an inherent insecurity, an inherent fear, and as a result of that they try to compensate and unnecessarily assert themselves constantly, and in this way unnecessarily dominate others, and and the result is that their children also get a little bit affected. And like this, it carries on from generation to generation. All kinds of traumas, all kinds of neurotic problems that people have. And so the mental health of society is, in a sense, a big obstacle in leadership, because when someone is mentally not stable and not developed, then his leadership will be negative leadership and will do damage. And that's what you see in many cases. And of course, someone can try and break the chain, and I mean, even taking it back to my own life, I can't just say that my father was an angel. He wasn't, right? That he was like a great role model. He wasn't. Too much alcohol, right? For example, was a major problem. No time, no attention, and a tendency to minimize people. Like, for example, if you liked yellow, he would say, like, bananas, bananas, the whole day, till you got sick and tired of it. So you learn to be very neutral around the man. Anyway, it's a long time ago, so by now I can, I've opened up. But there was a time when I became closed, and became very concealed about my feelings because of that that kind of father. So a father is supposed to be a leader, a leader who will help you to realize your potential, help you to get ahead in the world, and will give you right? The tools that you need, you know, with love, right? It should be like that. So you can see where I'm going, that leadership really begins with personal qualities. It begins with personal character. And it's not just about skills, you know. I mean, if we think that leadership is only about transferring skills upon others, yeah, then it won't go very far. Whereas if the skills are not so developed, but the character is very developed, then we are getting real leaders. You know, like if you do an MBA, a business degree, then you'll find that on high level in business administration, on high level, a lot of emphasis is placed on ethics. And the more you go like top level managers in the world, it's ethics that's actually a big thing. Because where ethics are lacking, where character is lacking, where is leadership? What kind of? Yeah, so where is leadership? Where ethics are lacking? Yeah. And that's like, you know, that's what you see in politics, right? The biggest thing in politics in the world, where are the ethics? You know, and go like, yeah, what kind of leaders do we have? You know? I was on one plane, and the whole plane was full, and there was one empty seat next to me, and I was hoping it would stay empty. And then the last passenger came on board. And it was like a tall African man, who was leaving from Johannesburg, and quite dark. And I thought, he looks like he's not from South Africa. And he had a golden chain, the type that drug dealers wear, you know. So I looked at him and thought, maybe he's from Nigeria. Without, you know, just a practical observation, nothing against Nigeria, okay? But he was from Nigeria. And he had a book in his hand, which was a biography of Pablo Escobar. You know, the drug lord of Colombia, you know, the famous one. So that sort of confirmed the whole thing, right? Drug dealer from Nigeria. Anyway, he was sitting next to me, and he also had a magazine. And in the magazine, there was a center spread, and on the center spread, there was a whole list of different heads of state, and it showed how much money they had stolen. And Suharto from Indonesia, he was like the top of the pops. He had stolen, according to the magazine, $59 billion. Which was, okay, whether true or not, I leave that in the middle. But probably something close to that. And then the man, you know, so $59 billion is a serious thing. So he's reading this magazine, so I'm sort of looking over his shoulder, you know. And so he sees me looking, you know, and then he smiles. And he says, yes, $59 billion. He stole $59 billion. He stole $59 billion. You couldn't spend it if you wanted to. And he kept on saying it, you know. He stole $59 billion. $59 billion. You couldn't spend it if you wanted to. And guess what? Guess what I was saying when I got off that plane? Yes, I was saying, he stole $59 billion and you couldn't spend it if you wanted to. I mean, he made a point. I got the point. It's a fact that, you know, how can you steal so much money? What are you going to do with it? How can you spend it? It's just like, how many shoes can you buy? How many cars can you have? Even a private plane, you know, with $59 billion. Two private planes. I mean, three? You know, where are you going to park them all? Buy an airport? Okay. Buy an airport. Then what? You know? What are we going to do next? You know? couldn't spend it if he wanted to. So the very fact that such kind of abuse exists in the world is something of deep concern, and that we must approach, you know, that we must approach through in a personal approach. We cannot approach that in a social approach, a general approach, and all leaders in the world should be tested. You know, there should be more training, there should be more monitoring for compliance and so on. We need better systems, you know, we need better police. But it is said that when people have these kind of relationships of policing each other, when in a group of people everyone is just policing each other, then, you know, it becomes a very difficult society. You have a group of people and everyone is together, we're all working together, but at the same time we're policing each other. And if anyone takes one step over the line, then, you know, they're suddenly the enemy. And it's like, you know, today you're the friend, you make one mistake and then suddenly you are the criminal and you become an outcast. It's like a very intense atmosphere when you need rather something else. You need rather a family atmosphere. See, when you're in a family, it's different than when you are with colleagues. When you are with colleagues, if your colleague, you know, doesn't get it together, then you go like, you know, come on, you know, shape up, you know, or like, you know, ship out, you know, I mean, look, you know, I mean, get your act together or we're going to trade you in, you know, you're out. But with your brother, you can't really do that, right? He is what he is, a case, but anyway, he's your brother. What you're going to do, you know, trade him in? Yeah, it's like, so a family atmosphere is very essential. To bring the better part out of people, we need a social structure which is much more supportive of relationships of trust. But then also, see, it's like here you have an educational institution. It's not designed on trust. It's designed by a policing system. The policing system is basically called exams. And it's like, you know, and we don't care who you are. Yeah, but like, you know, but I have potential, but no, we don't care. We have an impersonal system called exam, and you will have to perform, and if you do, good for you, and if you don't, tough noogies, too bad. You know? See you later. So, there is a basic society which doesn't nourish leadership. A society, because it's impersonal. A personal society is actually more suitable for what I introduced in the beginning, 360 degree leadership. Because then, you know, if you are just helped to realize your own potential, yeah, everyone has unique potential. Everyone is an individual, and you just never know. Right? You never know what hidden talent someone may have, and if we harness that, yeah, and build a person up, then better results. So, real leadership is stimulated in a more personal environment rather than in an impersonal environment. Yeah. Maybe, you know, someone has great capacity, but somehow or other exams, you know. Blank every exam, you know, it's like just too much anxiety, and will become an underachiever. Yeah. So that's actually a waste of resources. And that means the system is not capable. So we're looking at, or we're advocating a different approach. The Vedic culture was a different culture, a more personal culture, where a more personal approach was harnessed, and teaching was not necessarily linked to a system of exams. Teachings was very individual, and each individual was simply meant to realize his potential. There was also not a job market which required, you know, a certain certificate. Even that was ultimately more personal. And that's generally what you see in traditional societies, where personal relationships were providing the judgment about someone's qualification. So basically, our modern society is an artificial society, which in one sense is stifling to real leadership. Anyhow, that's the environment we work in. What time am I? Okay. So in this environment we hope to at least as individual strengthen our character, so that we as individuals can actually give something. When we have gained strength of character, then we can contribute something to the environment, and only then can we lead people towards a happier life. Otherwise you go with that painting, you know, there's this European painting of a blind man leading a whole row of blind people who are all holding on, you know, it's Bruegel, a famous painting, and of course they're heading for a ditch. So that's where's the world heading? Where are we heading? If I ask a few questions, like, while you're munching away on your lunch, you know, 7 billion people on the planet, and the weight of the 7 billion people is felt in so many ways. The oceans are acidic, the greenhouse gases, the never-ending need for energy, and the resultant nuclear power stations, and South Africa wants another one, right? And so on, and all the problems related to that. So yeah, what is leadership meant to do? As I said earlier, the first thing is leadership must bring us to happiness. Real happiness. Otherwise, it's not real leadership at all. Otherwise, it's just lack of leadership. And that's what we see in modern society. a rampant lack of leadership, of true leadership. Because so far, we haven't created a society which has a fundamental structure favorable for creating happiness. So, in my talk, I have kind of sketched that, and I'll let you take a few bites before I ask for feedback, because just as the time is sort of coming to a finish, and it's time for your feedback, you're at the same time eating, so that's a little difficult to talk. But if in between bites you'd have a comment or a question, it would be most welcome. Yeah.
Thank you so much for the talk. Particularly interested in the notion of getting a job. We find ourselves in having gone through a school system that trains one to get a job. And I find myself constantly questioning that notion of having to get a job. These are just questions that are going through my mind. You know, why would one want to get a job?
Yeah, I sympathize with you. Yeah, I also feel like that.
I've come up with a few, you know, attempts to answer that. Someone to gain, one to earn, many someone to, I don't know, for like...
You know, the first thing is that we've created a world based on technology and so on. And the first thing is that there are some people who have jobs and some people who don't have jobs. So that's the first mistake in society. That's the first thing that's wrong. Because basically, everyone, good leadership would mean everyone should be provided with livelihood. Everyone. No one exempted. A good leader should provide for the whole society. Right? That everyone will have to do something, you know, to make that livelihood, that's also there. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, either you have to milk a cow, or you have to grow some grains, or you have to work in an office, or you have to fly a plane, or, you know, be an engineer, which, you know, whatever. But because we have an artificial way of life, yeah, it's based on a production consumption society which comes from which is grounded on technology, yeah? And then then there are only limited jobs, so you're lucky if you're going to get one, and then you can, you know, get all the products of that modern society, which you're going to need because the whole world is made up like that. You know, like now the new iPhone has already just a system that at the push of one button you can buy things and pay. That is just one button and you can start paying, and they're setting up this system. Yeah, that's the future. One day you need an iPhone if you want to pay anything. You see how the system is kind of locking you in to the job. Please. It's a little louder because...
Sorry. I think just building on that, I think money is the basis of the system, and money is what creates the police system.
Mm-hmm.
Money is what gets these like minions of people. So right. There's so many people who have good intentions, who want to do something good in the world. I mean, for example, like, I would love to work with animals, but I know that a job like that doesn't pay. Like, you're either destructing, like, harming the earth and making a lot of money, or you're doing something good, and, like, you're not rewarded for that. It's just,
right.
It's horrible.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a very good point. I think it's Yeah, because we have a society where the economy is the highest, the highest ideal. Ultimately, that's the first priority, economy, and that's not the happiness of the people. People are being sacrificed for the economy, basically, and there's a few who are exploiting the economy, obviously. And then, yeah, the general mass of people like us, we are not really benefiting, we are being exploited in that system. True. Yeah. And of course, you know, the more we go away from being connected to nature, the more this whole artificial situation will increase. Like, I was kind of, when I look at statistics and I see that, like, in the year 2000, 35% of the world population was living in the cities. Now it's 55%. So it's in 15 years, less than 15 years, increased by 20% in the world. These are worldwide statistics. So it's a huge increase. The countryside's emptying out, right? So the animals and the farms and all those things, you know, there's like less and less of that going to be relevant. Right? And then, yeah, and then gradually you get these mega farm factories, and you know that where animals are just like, yeah, treated like no longer like living beings, but like things, you know, food, and food on legs, right? Which is like, yeah. Then what kind of compassion is there in such a society? What kind of love is there? You know, it's like, But anyhow, you know, like when we go into this direction of like a world, we were all born into a world that we didn't ask for, you know what I mean? And you all have to sort of make something out of it. And if you just go like, you know, I don't like this world, it's just, it's through and through wrong, and this and that. Okay, you know, that's, then you just stay home and get depressed. And so that's not a good response either. So, you know, yeah, I'm older than all of you, so I have some old songs in my head, you know, but John Lennon is still in my head with, you know, you may say that I'm a dreamer, you know, but I'm not the only one. And that's a fact, right? That's a fact. So we need dreamers in the world, you know, people who have idealism, who say, we're going to do something different, and we're going to try and do it anyway, you know, despite of the system. So maybe, you know, yeah, find a creative way instead of like just slotting in, you know. Okay, you know, your number is, yeah. It's pretty depressing if you're like just go in a slot, right? That's already waiting for you, and that's your life. You're going to be in that slot, and we can predict exactly what you're going to be when you're 53. Yeah. Exciting. Yeah, so be brave, have the courage, and try something, some idealism. You know, we need people with a dream in this world. And such people, they move the hearts of other people. You know, people who stand up, who live for a dream, those who remember, you know, Martin Luther King, you know, whatever he was, will always be remembered for like a man with a dream, you know. So does Lennon and others, you know. So yeah, I think a leader is not afraid to be different. You know, the sheep, they all go in the pack, you know. Bleh. Right? I have sometimes done an exercise where I had a room filled with people and I made them all say, bleh. And I tell you, each time I was shocked myself by the sound and how much it sounds like a herd of sheep. So yeah, the sheep tendencies, please.
And when you are then swimming against the stream,
yeah,
where do you find that stability to keep going? It's
yeah,
really hard to keep motivated.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't just ignore it altogether. You got to do it in an intelligent way. So you got to anchor yourself to an extent in the system. We can't ignore the system we live in altogether. Most of, you know, only if you're lucky. Most of, you do need money, you know. As long as there are, is a system based on money, we're going to need it, and where are you going to get it? And not everyone has that lucky business sense, you know, where money just comes. So, to an extent, we may go along with it, but you also don't have to sell out to it and go in as a believer, you know. Yes, wonderful, I'm going to make a career, and like she says, in a company that's destructive, you know, and you just basically sell your soul, you know, to, it's like, it's not necessary. You can have some idealism and some standards, and I think, but yeah, to be complete, go completely against the currents, that's very difficult. So, some balance is to be there. But still, having said that, let's keep some idealism, you know? Let's keep some idealism. And let us really try and be like, you know, I started with a model about the 360 degree leadership from Maxwell, which basically is that it's not only the CEO who is the leader, everyone is a leader in his own field, in his own circle of influence. And I think that's sort of very valuable view, because otherwise, you know, it's a few people that you're talking about when you speak about leaders, but we're talking about everyone. Be a leader in your own circle of influence and make the difference, and that will make the difference, surely. And it starts with you and your own integrity. It starts with personal integrity and personal qualities. That's where it begins. 10 to 2, they told me, is the cutoff point. So I guess we got there. There's always a cutoff point in any situation. Somehow or other, whenever you finish, you never really finished. And that's life. You know, I'm somehow or other, I don't know how it happened, here I'm sitting, all wrinkled and all shriveled up, 61 today, 62 coming close, thinking, okay, how much time I got left? And I'm thinking, but I'm not finished. I'm not finished. There's still so much I have to do, so much to achieve. It's a fact. Personally, so much to achieve still. So therefore, there's no time to waste, actually. Life is meant for each individual to grow, to become a better person. That is leadership. So with those last words, I say goodbye to you, and it was fun to be here, and hope to meet you again some other time in the future.